Thank you for downloading this episode of the Dad Podcast. You want to help support the show? Tell your friends. Get the word out. Facebook, Twitter, smoke signals. Maybe even take out a Craigslist personal. Whatever you gotta do.
Listen to me, listen to my words as they vanish. Let's go chase the sun.
Welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Warsham, and usually with me, as always, is Paco Lancini, a.k.a. Adam Dooley. Unfortunately, some of you who listen online or maybe follow the fan page know that he had a last-minute family thing that came up, so he had to bounce and head over to Utah, of all places. So he is on a plane and going somewhere. Maybe he's landed. I don't know. I don't keep tabs on the guy like he keeps tabs on me. But I'm very excited. I wasn't planning on doing a show, but then I got ready for this scheduled interview and then found a bunch of stuff that I was like, well, let's do a show, because next week is going to be bananas, because I'm starting my trial run, running the board on the Bill Handel show. It's going to be available via podcast. So if you do a search for Bill Handel, that's H-A-N-D-E-L in iTunes, you can listen to the podcast. Otherwise, it will be on from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific time, and you can listen via the iHeartMedia app. KFI AM 640 is the station. And that is where I met this fantastic lady who I'm about to call. Her name is Julie Lithcott-Hames. The title of her book is How to Raise an Adult, and I am super, super, super excited about her. I actually found out about her through my father, and hello? I think she's there. Hello, Julie?
Hi, Justin.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Excelente. All right, good. I was actually just talking about how my dad is the one who actually told me about you, and I was giving the listeners a little bit of a background that I contacted you to be on the Bill Carroll show on KFI, where I also work. And my dad told me about this because he has a joke that he has a couple friends that have children that are in their mid to late 20s, still living at home. My uncle is about to turn 50. I want to just give you a little bit of context here. He's about to turn 50. And my grandfather unfortunately passed away a couple years ago. Everybody's fine, though. But the weird thing about it is that my dad put all the money in a trust. And my dad had this meeting with a lawyer. And the lawyer had this very uncomfortable moment where she's like, okay, well, I understand there's another son who's living at home that all of the money is going to take care of. And he goes, yes. And she was like, well, is he incapable in any way, either mentally or physically? And she was like, no. She's like, well, does he have a job? And she was like, no. She goes, so there's nothing wrong with him. And she was like, no. And so she kind of had this beat and then goes, okay. And so that's why for me, when I heard about your book and everything about it, I was unbelievably interested. I saw the CBS This Morning thing, and let's start off there, where you commented first off that what kind of started this whole trend of helicopter parenting or overparenting, whatever you want to call it, it started with a few like kidnapping cases that were highly publicized in the 80s. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's one of the four factors, Justin. We had a couple of highly publicized cases of stranger abduction of a child, and it really created in our American mindset this myth of the looming threat of a stranger at every moment, on every corner, and so on. And you know, a generation of kids was raised not able to walk to the park, not able to walk on the sidewalk to school, not able to go to the local store. You know, our terrible, terrible fears meant we raised them in sort of a penned-in fashion. The trouble was our fears were wildly overblown. I mean, yes, when that terrible thing happens, it's a horrific tragedy, but it happens to such an infinitesimal number of kids every year. We really can't behave in every moment as if that's, you know, that's a likely thing. It just ends up undercutting our kids' chances to be free, to be independent, to build the skills that they need to build. So it's understandable that our fear is there, but we've got to educate ourselves about the reality and really prepare our kids for the world that's out there, not pretend that we can always protect or prevent.
Yeah, because I get a lot of flack, to be honest, especially here in Southern California, on how I kind of handle my kids. Like, I make my kids, they're only 6 and 4, but I already make them do like little chores for money around the house because I want them to be able to pay for their own things. I jokingly will say in real life and mean it, but also we comment a lot on this show about how whenever people say, hey, or the kids are in the grocery store and they go, oh, can we get this? Can we get that? And I go, ooh, I go, do you have any money? And they go, no. I go, oh, it sounds like you need a job is what it sounds like to me. And it's because that's what my father did with me. My father made me get a paper out when I was 9 years old. I had bills and a checking account by the time I was 13. And I think a lot of people today would look at that and go, man, that's so cold and so harsh. But the reality of it is that it made me transition. It made the transition from my parents' house into the real world so much easier, I imagine, than what other people go through. Would you agree with that?
I would agree, Justin. I think your kids are lucky that you're their dad. There's this wonderful study. I think it's the longest study of humans that's ever been conducted. The researcher is a guy named George Valent, and he looked at hundreds of men over 60 years. Most of them have since died because the study began in the late 30s. But what he learned was that the greatest predictor of professional success in life was that a young person did chores. And the earlier they started doing chores, the better. This actually predicts, success out in the professional world for the very reasons you intrinsically understand because of how you were raised. When you help out around the house, when you're responsible for your own stuff, when you have to pitch in, you learn how to be in a workplace. You learn how to be useful, in the lives of others and in a workplace environment. And so you're doing absolutely the right thing. And chores are the kind of thing that have gone by the wayside in communities like yours and mine, where we've gotten so hell-bent on our kid getting the right GPA or the right test score, we absolve them of helping around the house. We think we're being nice to them, but actually we're undercutting their chances for professional success. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I had a conversation with my sister-in-law recently where she, and again, I put this disclaimer on there because I know I'm not a doctor and I'm not an expert by any means, but I think it is contextually relevant in this conversation, is that I have a nephew who has some OCD-type tendencies. He's been diagnosed with like a disorder that things that are super soft are very abrasive to him only, kind of a thing, like a fleece blanket. He can't touch it. It seems harsh to him. And the mom, and I don't think the mom is doing anything wrong inherently, in the sense that she just wants to care for her children and do the right thing for them. But from my perspective, I look at it like we had a conversation. She said, well, the kid won't eat a broken cookie. And I said, well, that's not your kid with their disorder. That's any kid, any toddler. I go, I give my kid a broken cookie and they'll be like, I don't want to eat this. And I'll be like, oh, it sounds like you don't want a cookie. And I just pick it up. And then all of a sudden, everything changes. I said, well, hold on. Let's talk about this for a second here. And I said, she goes, no, he would not eat it at all, though. That's the difference. I said, yeah, but did you ever just say, okay, well, then there's no cookie? Or what did you do? And her daughter was here, and her daughter said, yeah, what did you do, Mom? Did you give him another cookie? And she goes, well, yeah, probably most of the time. I said, well, then you don't really know. Right? You never really gave the kid the opportunity to kind of build it in and suck it up, because not when they get out of the house, nobody's going to be looking to make things easier for them. Correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously your nephew has some serious issues going on, and I'm like you, I'm not an expert in that field, but the larger point is, I think, absolutely right. We've got to, be pushing our kids toward, whether you think of it as pushing or nudging or encouraging, our job is to build that skill set in them of, I'll try new things. I'll be flexible. I am adaptable. I can learn. I can try, as opposed to trying to carefully cultivate their environment so it always meets their present need. We are doing too much for our kids as over parents, as helicopter parents, whatever you want to to call it. You know, we're overprotecting. We're providing way too much direction about what they ought to do with their lives or with their days. And we're doing a lot of hand-holding to smooth the path and have the tough conversations on their behalf. And all of these things can have short-term win, like the kid is happy or that short-term goal was achieved, but they don't learn a darn thing.
Yeah.
Wait, this is a podcast. I can say damn.
You could say whatever the fuck you want to say, Julie.
Thing.
You could cut loose. No radio. No FCC. Cuss all you want, Julie. Let it all hang out, girl.
Oh, we're messing with our kids, man. And, you know, look, I'm a parent, too. Let me get that out there. I've got a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, and I'm not perfect, and neither are they. And I had my own awakening when I was dean of freshmen at Stanford for 10 years. And every year, more and more parents were coming and wanting to be involved in the life of their son or daughter at the university. And every year, fewer, you know, there were more of those parents and fewer young adults who wanted to do for themselves. And I would give them this talk when they dropped their kid off at orientation. I would say, you know, trust your kid, trust the university. Now, please go home. I mean, it was a 20-minute talk, but it boiled down to those three messages. And in 2009, I had just given that speech in September, came home the next day for dinner with my own family. My own kids were 8 and 10 at the time, and it's dinner time, and I'm leaning over to my son's plate. He was the 10-year-old, and I began cutting his meat. And I thought, oh, shit, I am that parent. You know, it all of a sudden clicked for me. Like,
wow.
This is why parents can't let go at 18. If they've been doing everything along the way, how can they possibly step back? The point, what that aha moment for me was, childhood is meant to prepare them for independence, you know, not to further their dependence on me. So I need to stop cutting their meat. They need to know how to cut their own meat and beyond. They need to take their plates in. They need to set the table. They need to do laundry. They need to do garbage and recycling, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I realized that doing for them actually ended up undercutting them and likely to turn them into those 18-year-olds who are still looking for mom or dad to tell them what to do or for mom and dad to actually do it for them.
Yeah, kudos to you. I mean, I can't either sit here and say that that's the other thing I love so much about your story too, is that you kind of are seeing almost the aftermath by working at a college and seeing these, you know, 20-year-old their first venture out into the real world and how ill-equipped, maybe not mentally in the sense of academia, but in the sense of just practical sense, like laundry or just bills or things of that nature, they're almost completely lost in. But they can write the hell out of a 5-paragraph essay like no other.
And, right.
And
you know what?
Go ahead.
Look, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No.
So in a purely narrow academic sense, they may be quite accomplished. But even in the academic sense, what we're hearing from faculty on campuses all over is, if you give them a rather open-ended, you know, vague assignment, you know, like an English paper, you know, and then they do a draft and you scribble on it, well, tell me more, or what about this, or have you considered this, or, you know, not sure I understand, you know, by way of your comments as an instructor, students today are more likely to come back to you and say, just tell me what you want me to say. They want exact, precise direction, because childhood in so many communities has been lived according to this very, you know, to this checklist, do this, do that. When they've given a more wide open task, whether it's a paper in college or, you know, a problem in the workplace, like we're trying to get to D, we'll give you, you know, A and part of B, they're lost, because without, you know, all of B and all of C, they can't get to D. And again, that's just, you know, the checklist of childhood coming home to roost. So they are quite ill-equipped, both academically and in the workplace. On top of that, the psychological harm is they've basically been deprived of developing a sense of self. And I'm not talking self-esteem. I'm talking self. Self-efficacy is a concept in psychology that basically is the foundational stuff that makes us whole, healthy humans, and it builds by learning that our behavior leads to outcomes. So if some other human, however thoughtful, helpful, and loving, i.e. a parent, mm-hmm. is doing the doing and the thinking and the being for us as children, we end up not developing a sense of self. And that's where these tremendous, you know, mental health difficulties, you know, are coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I dealt with this on my own level. I feel like I'm kind of coming out of it a lot, if not a little, I don't know. But when my son, especially my older son, when he was very young, I spent a lot of nights, you know, you're sleepless nights, let alone as a, with a young child, but I would have extra sleepless nights just kind of constantly self-diagnosing and self-analyzing my parenting and what I was imparting. And then if I had a moment where I lost my temper, I would really beat myself up over it. And I just kept wrestling with it and I went to therapy for about a year and a half over a moment I had when he was 3 months old. And I remember calling my father, and I'm very close with my dad and unbelievably thankful. My dad, for by all intents and purposes, for every other, I guess, analysis that you would have, my dad was an asshole. Like, he did nothing but tell me how stupid I was when I screwed up. And just because I didn't know the simplest thing to him, or I couldn't watch him do something once and then pick it up, he would just rail on me. But the weird thing about it, and the thing I kept coming back to, was that as a child, I never thought my dad didn't love me. I just thought he expected stuff of me and that I needed to meet those expectations. And as an adult who then had children and then called my father and said, I need help, Dad. I go, how did you deal with the anxiety? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, the worry about whether, and this is a man who thumped me on the head and beat the crap out of me, constantly told me I was dumb, had me employed at 9, like lots of things that I think even in the 80s were kind of weird and avant-garde in parenting, you know. And I said, how did you deal with knowing whether or not what you were doing was the right thing or not? And he's like, I never worried. it never entered his brain. And then I took a step back even further in time when my grandfather passed and we went back to his farm that he grew up on in Texas. And I realized that he at 5 years old and my great uncle at 9 years old were farming 180 acres of cotton by themselves without adult supervision. Now, I'm not saying that's what we should all do, but I'm saying that I think we all could agree that if we gave our toddlers or older kids a 4x4 garden to take care of, there would be some kind of pushback or an emotional breakdown. And I don't know that I think it's great to have emotional awareness, but I don't know if we want to overcorrect that far. Do you think that's fair to say?
Justin, my goodness, what a story you just told. starting with my dad was an asshole. I've just written that down in all caps. You know, the childhood you describe, nobody recognizes anymore. Not in communities, of affluence or, you know.
We
swung to the opposite direction.
Right.
And we've become way too protective of our kids' feelings. And we think that self-esteem is built by constantly praising them and just patting them on the head and smoothing the path for them. And it just gives them a false sense of self. Either they become entitled assholes themselves.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they have the opposite problem, which is they believe they aren't actually capable of doing anything unless mom or dad plans it, smooths it, handles it, and so on. I think there's a sweet spot. You know, your dad railed on you. He told you, you know, you were stupid. There's nobody today who's an expert who would say that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And there's something about your resilience, you know, your little guy self back in the day that was able to withstand that. What we would now call kind of an emotionally abusive situation.
Right.
You were able to withstand that. You were stronger for it, but not every kid would be by any means. And so the point is we don't have to be assholes, but we can set rules and expectations and enforce right. them. You know, that's actually our job as parents. And this is where today, you know, the baby boomers were the first to parent in this overparenting way in the 80s. And we Gen Xers have just sort of followed along, you know, because that's how parenting is now. But, you know, we've tried to be their best friend. You know, this was what the baby boom did. I want to be my kid's best friend. And this is why they can't possibly let them go when they go to college. They've got this intertwinedness that is all, you know, very mutually loving and wonderful. But that's all good. But if you haven't set rules and expectations, if there haven't been consequences when your kid failed to do something, you know, they just don't know how to be adult in the world. And God help us, Justin, the millennials are the biggest generation in American history. They are larger than their parents' generation, the boomers. What's to become of not just them, but us, you know, America, when we're led by a generation of people who have been praised constantly, not asked to do any chores, have not built a work ethic, have had the path laid and smooth for them, you know, what's to become of us? I mean, that's really what was behind. I care a lot about young adults. I mean, I was a dean because I love working with young adults and watching them and helping them unfold into their adult selves. But even bigger picture than those individuals, what's to become of us? And, you know, also I want to say, I'm not here to rail against millennials. They're incredible people. They want the chance to grow and thrive like every generation before them. If we're upset with their entitlement in the workplace or their lack of practical skills, it's not their fault.
Right.
This is how they were raised. And, you know, I'm so encouraged when I do a talk somewhere and a millennial comes up to me and says, I think I was raised this way. Now what do I do? You know, I mean, that's the change that needs to occur. You know, they've got to figure out how to reclaim a sense of self from a childhood that was all flowery and wonderful and full of certificates and robe and ribbons and trophies, you know, but deprive them of a sense of, you know, how to be in the world.
Yeah. And that's why I think your book and your message is so unbelievably important, because I couldn't agree more with you, and especially in the sense that it isn't their fault and it isn't even the parents' fault. I mean, if you really look at it, they're really doing what they think is best, and it intuitively, it's very easy for all of us to wrap our minds around the fact that intuitively, the idea of protecting your child and wanting to make them feel good makes sense. It totally makes sense. And I, as a parent myself, sometimes when I rail on my kid and I go, man, I feel like I'm really getting after him a lot, I kind of have to check in with myself and go, yeah, but it's because he's not meeting the mark. And then eventually, though, they meet the mark. And then things mellow out until they find a new boundary that they need to push. And I think that it's easy to fall into the trap. And I have really been fortunate enough, as sad as it is for, like, in the example of my uncle that I keep bringing it up, as sad as his existence is, it really has affected my kids' lives and hopefully their lives for the better in an immeasurable way, in my opinion. But I don't know. I keep going back to that thing, and I hope I'm not beating a dead horse with you, though. But I mean, I think it's very easy for us to get to that idea of saying, I just want my kid to be safe and I want them to feel good, and that it seems counterintuitive to push them to struggle through life, because it's actually that struggle that creates the ultimate self-esteem, right?
Yeah. So here's what I would say. Look, there's a difference between you know, berating a person and calling them out on, you know, bad effort. So what the psychologists are saying these days is, you know, when something great happens, don't say, oh my gosh, honey, you're so amazing, you're so smart. You know, that creates what's called a fixed mindset, which tells the kid, okay, I'm smart, I'm great, I don't want to ever take risks, either academically or, you know, in terms of activities, because I don't want evidence that I'm not smart or great. You know, So they tend to play it safe if all we do is kind of praise their smarts and their greatness. If we say, wow, you worked really hard at that, you know, you really stuck with it, you know, you praise the effort that led to the great outcome, that teaches them that, hey, my hard work, my effort, trying again, you know, that really pays off. That's the kind of behavior you want to recognize. On the other side, when they do something bad, like, for example, you know, my son, when he was 15, you know, forgot to bring his lunchbox in. He left it in his backpack in the front hallway over the weekend, you know, and there was an apple in there, and the ants found it. And on Monday morning, I was like, I need your lunchbox, you know, and I'm still packing lunch for my 15-year-old, so that's a different problem I can talk to.
Baby steps,
but
Julie, baby
he was
steps.
Like, oh, my God, there are ants. And I was like, you know, I was really frustrated. And I knew that this was, you know, at first I started cleaning it up, and then I thought, wait a minute, he did this.
Yeah.
You know, he's never going to learn if he doesn't go through the sweat of having to deal with these damn ants. So I said, you know, Sawyer, you need to deal with this. And he's like, but Mom, I've got to. I said, I know, but, you know, this needs to be dealt with. If it's not dealt with now, they're going to be all over the house. And I didn't say, you idiot. You know, I didn't say, look what you've done. There are ants in the house. I said, Sawyer, you didn't bring your lunchbox in. Now there are ants swarming all over that apple and, you know, all the way from the front door to the lunchbox. That needs to be cleaned up. It's your responsibility. You know, here's the 409. And I was firm. I was clear. You know, I wasn't happy, but I didn't make him feel like an idiot.
Right.
You know, I taught him that what he had done was problematic, but it didn't get to, you know, I don't love you anymore,
right.
You know, or you're a jerk or you're an asshole. So that's the difference. It's like focus in on what they actually did and correct that and have high expectations there. And the thing is, kids are looking for our attention and our approval, and they're going to get it either through good acts or bad acts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here's another thing you can do. When you notice them doing something good in the world, you know, they held a door open for someone. They helped somebody reach something on a high shelf if they're tall. You know, somebody dropped something and they ran after them to hand it back to them. You know, you don't then go all wild with praise like, oh, my God, you're so wonderful. You're so perfect. You just look at them in the eye with a little smile and you say, I saw what you did, and that was a really nice thing to do.
Right.
I'm proud of you. And then move on.
By that, what you're saying is...
They didn't save the world, but that makes them want to do it again.
Right. Don't overpraise common decency, right? Is that kind of what you're getting at? We don't need
to... Don't overpraise it, but do notice it.
Notice it,
because when they're noticed for it, and they see, wow, you know, Dad's proud of me, they're going to want it. They're going to want more of that, you know, feeling from you.
Julie, you are officially my new hero. Yeah. You are my new hero. You are my new hero. I don't know if I'm guilty of overpraising you right now, but I'm not.
No, this is perfectly appropriate.
In this situation, it makes total sense, Justin. No, because I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a couple things. You don't know this, but we have a chat room that while people are listening live, and a very interesting question came up that is in kind of the context of what I wanted to run up your flagpole and see what you thought is that. One of the things I've noticed in people around me, especially when their kids are teenagers and in high school, there seems to be a trend, if you would, of people really emphasizing extracurricular activities and the importance of kind of taking that time in high school to really enjoy it, to really celebrate these final days of being a kid without responsibility. And I was in plays and things like that when I was in high school, and I played a little bit of sports and stuff, but my father's point, he always pushed me, you need a job. You need to get out there and get working and know what it's like to pay bills and take care of yourself. And at the time, I kind of saw it as kind of a pain in the ass, to be honest with you. But when I grew up and was actually on my own, it is the thing I am most thankful of from him as a parent, because I feel like it creates a situation where if you peak in high school as far as your happiness or contentness or whatever you want to say that is that you're seeking out, that's kind of sad, because that's a very small portion of your overall life, and that it makes more sense to set yourself up to have an easy transition and to maybe be coasting by the time you're in your 30s or 40s, as opposed to still struggling financially because you spent your 20s figuring everything out. And the reason I bring that up is because my plan is when my son is 12 or 13, I'm going to kind of talk to him, not with a pressure, like we got to figure, I'm not a drill sergeant, but just kind of say, what do you want to do with your life? Do you have any ambitions? Do you have any interests? And whatever he says, I'm going to try to urge him and guide him in either A, creating a business on his own that he can kind of get in that realm, or immediately find somebody in my life or that we can connect with that he can then shadow and work for free and just watch what they do and observe them so that he can see what the world is like and then go through his high school time kind of having a better idea of what his career plans would be long term. And the reason I know this is really long, and I'm sorry, Julie, but the reason I'm asking this is because the question in the chat was, what do you do if you have a 13-year-old who has not had these kind of expectations given to them, and now all of a sudden you're like, maybe they're having the same eye-opening moment you had. So is that too much? I'm sorry.
No. I loved it. I'm taking lots of notes. Okay. And I was going to say, are you going to want me to break in here, or because you're doing great on your own? there's a lot here. The first thing that I want to counter is there are a lot of teens and high schoolers who are doing a lot of extracurriculars, but in many communities, it's not because the kid really enjoys it and it's their last chance to have a happy childhood. It's because the parent or the kid or the community thinks this is how you get into the right college. And so one of the things I rail against is what I call the checklist of childhood, which is all of the activities and the enrichment and, you know, the leadership and the community service and the sports and the dance and the drama and all of whatever it is, you know, designed to lead to college admission. You know, I'm against it. I think it's horrendous that kids are so overscheduled. They end up not having enough time to sleep or just chill. All of us humans need a little downtime. It's not frivolous, you know, to just spend some time alone with nothing to do. We need to be, you know, alone with our own thoughts for a little bit. You know, that's where we dream. That's where we, you know, we begin to discover who we are. So when our dad sits down with us at 12, as you intend to do with your son, which I think is a great idea, you know, we've had a chance to synthesize our experiences and our perspectives and our activities, and we can answer questions like, well, what do you think you might want to do with your life? So the overscheduling, so people should not do activities just to quote-unquote get a kid into college.
Or for scholarships. Just, I have lots of people that put their girls in cheerleading for a scholarship, and that's insane to me.
Well, here's the other thing. To your point about jobs, college admissions people are noticing that kids today, again, in communities where this is, it's not a financial necessity, you know, kids today don't have part-time jobs, you know, and they actually like it when they get an essay from an applicant that talks about their job at the, you know, local grocery store or at the local bookstore or, you know, helping out so-and-so every weekend, whatever it is, because, you know, there are great stories there. The kid learns a lot about themselves and about life and about other humans by doing that work. And the college admissions people are far more interested in that kind of essay than that sort of essay about the manufactured community service experience in El Salvador, you know, which some parent constructed to help get the kid into college. So, right. You know, there's the practical value of your kid actually holding a part-time job in high school. There's also the very utilitarian value of it might actually look good on college applications if they do that instead of the more, you know, glossy thing. Finally, to your question about, you know, sitting down with your 12-year-old, it wasn't really a question, but, you know, you want him to sort of start to talk about, well, what he might be interested in. In my book, I talk about this concept of find your passion, and preferably in time to, you know, apply to college and tell the college about it. Again, it's one of those things we do. We force kids to know themselves so well and maybe even have a singular noteworthy achievement by age 16 so they can brag about it to colleges. Most kids aren't going to have a noteworthy achievement at 16. You know, many of us won't have one ever in life. Doesn't mean we can't live a happy, healthy life. So what this great professor at Stanford, an adolescent development researcher, Bill Damon, has written about is purpose. You know, each one of us needs to have some kind of purpose in life. Oh. This is sort of the reason it should be the underlying motivator for the choices we make.
Yes.
And we want to help our kids discover that. And what we do is we engage in conversation with them. Yeah, 12. But we're looking to them for cues and clues. So this isn't, I want my kid to be a fill in the blank. This is, you know, my kid seems naturally inclined toward this or that. My kid says he's interested in this and that. What can I do as a parent to fan those flames? The kid ignites the spark. We fan the flames by, as you said, connecting them with mentors that they could shadow in that field, you know, providing them with an opportunity here or there to develop that interest further, you know, not to force them down that path, but just to, you know, it's our job to give them as much as we can, whatever that means, given our income and our community and whatever. Of course, you know, we want to support them in developing their skill, but they always have to be the one kind of taking the lead as opposed to just following our lead.
Yes. I don't want to take up much more of your time because I'm such a tremendous fan, again, of you and your message and everything you're saying. One of the other things that came up in the chat room that, and then we'll end with this or whatever, is that because I've been my parents divorced when I was young, and there's a mom who I think has had like a split up and is having kind of issues with a dad that's not so good at being a dad. And now she's got a new guy who's much better at kind of taking the lead. And I think she's hyper concerned about her son not being okay with having these expectations because, again, I think this is a concentrated dose of that kind of insecurity that maybe a lot of us have and the worry of being too hard on the kid. And I just want to put this out to you and see what you think about this, Julie, is that my thought is, yes, it sucks. It sucks because my mom, because she was young, bailed. She divorced my dad, and I didn't see her for 6 months. I got one phone call from her 3 months in, and did that affect me? Sure it did. But did my dad worry about how that would affect me? No. Thankfully, he just did what he knew was best for me and moved on and pushed me to move through it. And as I got older, I went to a little bit of therapy and figured some stuff out. But I really do, again, appreciate the fact that he didn't let me wallow in the self-pity, or he didn't even create it within me. That the fact of the matter is that what's going to create a better quality of life? Helping your kid and guiding them through the emotional choice of moving on, or just kind of sitting in it. You know what I mean? Do you think that's fair to say, Julie?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't really get anywhere by wallowing in our pain and our pity. You know, there is room, though, for acknowledging when shit has happened and we're feeling vulnerable, you know, to like say to the kid, yeah, this sucks. This shouldn't be this way, but this is the way it is, and we've got to move forward. So, you know, there's tremendous value in seeing the pain, recognizing it, looking it in the eye, acknowledging it exists, and then saying, okay, and now we've got to move on. And one of the best ways we can teach our kids how to move on is to let them know when we've, you know, that shit has happened to us, that we've struggled, and, you know, we're not perfect. Often they look at us and they see a role model who's just never had anything go wrong. And when we can let them know, look, yeah, times are tough for me. Here's how I coped. You know, it shows them that people survive difficult things and people they admire, like their parents as well.
Her name is Julie Lithcott-Hames, the name of the book that everyone should buy for not only yourself as just an example to put on your mantle, but for everyone around you. And if you got a shit whistle parent that you see next to in the carpool lane that you'd like to maybe change the way they were, give it to them as a joke gift. Who cares? It all goes to Julie's pocket. HowToRaiseAnAdult.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Dean Julie. You can follow her on Twitter as well in association with the book at Raise an Adult, or Facebook.com/HowToRaiseAnAdult if you want to use those social medias to definitely, please, guys, I think that there isn't a person listening to this podcast that doesn't agree wholeheartedly with what Julie is saying and her message. And even if you're already doing it, I think it's definitely worth spreading the message to other like-minded people, because one of the things I learned through being honest about my own struggles with parenting through this podcast is that people found this show and felt like they were the only ones who thought this way, and it really made them feel like validated. And so I think that just by spreading the message of this book, How to Raise an Adult, could, as this is going to sound really cheesy and blowhardy, but it really could shift the tide of what seems to be a growing trend of entitled youth that don't really understand what it's like to deal with the struggles of a real world living. All right. So again, thank you so much, Julie. Is there anything else? I know that we have a pretty large following in Los Angeles, and I remember when you were on Bill Carroll's show, you're going to be here in Los Angeles at the end of August giving a talk, correct?
I sure am, Justin. Thanks for letting me plug that. I'm going to be at a fabulous organization called Beit Shuva. It's in West LA, and I'm going to see if I can pull it up as I talk. And it's an addiction treatment center where, you know, they're seeing the effects of overparenting. Their clients are more and more in the age bracket 18 to 25. Their kids have been given too much by way of, you know, sort of affluence in life, and too little by way of expectations. And these kids end up turning to, you know, addictive behaviors as a way to have some control over something in their life. And so I'm going to be at Beit Shuva from 11 to 1 on August 30th, and they're at 8847 Venice Boulevard in West LA. So I'd love to see your listeners there. Love to be coming down to LA. Great community. Can't wait. And thanks for having me on the show, Justin. I appreciate your frank language. And, you know, our job, let me say this, our job as parents is to put ourselves out of a job. We yes. think we might want them to be successful in this or that career, have this or that income. Forget that. What you want is to raise a son or daughter who can pay their bills, you know, love other humans and love themselves, and be worthy of receiving the love of others. You know, have good character, good work ethic. Who cares what they do for a living? Get your own ego out of it. Let your kid be who they're going to be. Support them in being the best version of themselves. You know, don't try to make them into a mini you, or to live don't live vicariously through them. You know, they're their own person, and we need to get out of the way and raise them so that they can go be that person out in the world.
Julie, this has been a fantastic episode. Thank you for coming on. And please let me tell you that if you have anything you want to plug, any speaking arrangements or anything, please send them this way. Or if you want to just talk and rail about something, you have an open forum here. The people, I know these people, and they are going to love everything that you're saying. And you now have an army of people that will help you spread your message, because it's very inspiring and just all around awesome, in my opinion. So thank you again so much for taking the time, Julie.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Thanks to all the listeners for listening. Bye.
Right, bye. Julie Lithcott-Hames, again, howtoraiseanadult.com, at Dean Julie, at RaiseAnAdult, facebook.com/howtoraiseanadult. Oh, powerful stuff. Goosebumps. I know this sounds really cheesy, especially because I'm here and I'm by myself, but, and I know that there's a lot going on in the chat room and everything, and I just want to say to the mom, I got an email from, and I don't think it's the same person, but it, so on the off chance it is or it isn't, about this kind of stuff, that if you're going through it, let me just tell you that just hug the kid, find some happiness for yourself, and don't worry about moving on. If it is a very, very tough thing to wrap your mind around mentally, I could imagine, but there is nothing better that you can do for that kid than finding your own happiness. And that is not a selfish thing. That is a thing that you will do that will also show them how to find their own happiness. So definitely don't worry about anything that's happened. Let go of the past. That's the past. And your kid, I think, in my opinion, because I've been there. And that's the reason why I guess I get so blowhardy or maudlin about this stuff. And I'm getting choked up now even thinking about it, is that, you know, it did blow. I'm not mad at my mom, and I sometimes I worry that she listens and that I think that I hold some kind of ill will towards her. And that's not the case. In fact, as an adult and a person having kids, I understand more of why she did what she did than I ever did before. And I'm even more thankful for that understanding and the relationship that I have with her because of that. And that the reality is that I'm just as thankful for all of that as I was for the fact that things worked out the way they did. I hope my mom has no ill will towards my stepmom, but my stepmom came in and really did a solid thing, which it sounds like your guy is really doing too. And I talked to one of the teachers at the preschool. This is why this is kind of timely for me as well. I never have people ask me for parenting advice. It's very weird. I'm not a guy who gets up on a horse box or horse box. Maybe that's why, because I'm a fucking idiot. But a soapbox about this stuff. But she kind of said, she goes, Justin, she was having issues with these teenage kids. And this teacher is a phenomenal teacher. She is the Nazi that is at the school. She is the one that they call in and they threaten. She is the boogeyman that even parents at home, they say, do you want me to go to so-and-so? And the kids, no. And what I found super interesting about this was that she was a single mother. She had moved here from a foreign nation and was trying to build a life for her kids. In order to do that, she had to cultivate and work really, really hard and work a lot. And most of her money was being sent back home to still care for her kids who were living with family. So she took care of her kids from halfway across the world. And she did this, I want to say, for almost a decade. And within the last 2 to 3 years, she was finally able to bring her kids here. She has a guy. She's not married to this guy. And she said that he is frustrated because she says, I'm too easy on the kids and that it's not helping them. And what I found really interesting is this woman who at work gets it to a T, struggles with it with her own kids. And I told her, you just got to be the person you are here. She goes, it's hard. And after talking to her, it wasn't too hard to figure out it's the guilt. It's the guilt that was getting in her way. And it's understandable. It's understandable to feel guilty. It's understandable to feel ashamed. But what I think we all should understand and hopefully do, and I hope I'm putting this out there to people like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock, but on the off chance that I'm not, it doesn't help the kid. What helps the kid is for you to do what's right for the kid, and the kid will hold no ill will towards you. My father, honest to God, that man, I wanted to kind of say something so he didn't seem like such a dickhead to you guys. Have heard my dad. My dad is one of the greatest fathers I think anybody could honestly ask for, but he was kind of an asshole. I mean, and he was a flawed person and still is to a certain extent. And we all are. And I think that you got to let go of that expectation that you got to be the perfect example for your kid and that you just got to shoot for perfect. And when you miss, you teach them how to deal with messing up in those moments. God, do I sound like a cheesy Oprah special, but I really do mean it. And I hope that makes sense. And I hope it helps in some way, shape, or form. But let's get to some stupid stuff before we wrap this up. God, that was great. Isn't she great? How to Raise an Adult. Couldn't agree with it more. Buy it for your friends. Buy it for yourself. Just a really cool thing in my humble opinion. We've all fallen on hard times. And in talking about, you know, parenting and how important it can be, I think a great way and a reason to get rid of that guilt is that, you know, I don't like to make fun of the downtrodden in any way, shape, or form. But sometimes people make choices, you know, and they just don't work out. This is another one of those stupid criminal things where they had some instant karma. A 26-year-old woman climbed into a metal charity clothing donation box in Seattle around 4:30 a.m. on Monday to steal some stuff out of it. But the box was really small, only about 4 feet by 6 feet. You know the ones they have out in front of like a grocery store. So when she tried to crawl back out, unfortunately, her leg was stuck in the donation chute. Fire department had to come and cut her out. So, but evidently she turned down medical care and went about her merry way. But, and here's the thing. I think we've all had moments. I mean, Natalie and I, when we were younger and early on in our marriage, we had a moment of brokenness that we had to turn in aluminum cans to get money. So we had money to put gas in the car to go to work. So to me, it's not necessarily the fact that maybe this woman is struggling. I hope that she is struggling and got some clothes out of the deal. My fear is that she's not struggling and was hoping to get some free clothes. Out of the deal. I'm a little too emotional to read that story. I should have skipped it and realized that after the fact. But here's another fun one. A guy in Alabama, I don't know if anybody is from that area. There's a guy, 74-year-old Larry Barton, is the mayor of Talladega, Alabama. That's where the NASCAR track is. He used to have a radio show there with 71-year-old Benny Green. But they had a big falling out recently after Benny's wife, Charlotte, got it on with Larry and made a sex tape. Now, we have talked on this show about how there are some very interesting things that you could find with a Google search. But and I know that maybe your life changes and you get a lot of, you know, don't give a shit in your, I imagine, when you reach an older age. But if I'm not that interested in taping myself now, I have a guess that I'm going to be even less interested. I've seen pictures of me when I was 21, and I feel like that's a good-looking dude. We recently had family photos taken, and I was the first thing I thought. My wife looks beautiful. We're on the beach. It looks, honest to God, it really does. With my family, it looks straight out of those fucking things they put on the 5x7. Like, we're the model family, except for my fat gray-haired ass. So imagine that chubby-ass guy at 71. Listen, I might bang somebody's wife. I couldn't. I don't think I would, but that's a long ways away. But I could tell you I would not record it. But the funny thing is, what I would do if somebody else decided to bang my wife, I would do this. A Saturday morning, this gentleman waited outside a barbershop where the other guy works and attacked him with a baseball bat. Fortunately, the other guy was hospitalized with injuries to his head, face, eye, and jaw. Meanwhile, Larry, who's denying that he's on the sex tape, quote, "I know that Benny is a master photoshopper. He could do a lot of things with a computer." Also great about getting old in that Photoshop that works on video. That's good times. Here's a story in the similar regard to what I was talking about with my photos and maybe why I will not change my lifestyle like my pictures suggest I should. A new survey of 2,544 women found that chubby guys are the best in bed. Here are the top three reasons why. They seem more eager to please the women than themselves. You see, and I talked about this a lot when I first started doing stand-up, is that ladies get too wrapped up. And I don't think so. I think once you become a wife, I don't know if you're this kind of chick, but I think the moms that listen to this show can definitely understand where I'm coming from when you were younger. Remember when you were the young girls? And my wife says this a lot, when you're kind of dumber, you know, this isn't me talking, this is her. You were dumber then, you didn't know. My wife was hung up on this good-looking dude who could dance, and that was the boyfriend she had before I swooped in and yanked her away. But you like these guys that are like the kind of the jockey guys, and I get that, but I really feel like nerds are kind of the way to go. They may not be the most attractive, but yes, Brandy, dad bod is what I'm talking about. The nerds may not be the most attractive, but they are definitely the most excited to see you naked, definitely. I think that they're less likely to be that, you know, visor-wearing frat guy who's, you know, you've seen one boob, you've seen them all. And I think they're, I would imagine if I was a woman, there's something about being empowering that's why I started being honest about my wife every time I see her. I'm like, she wore a shirt yesterday that had a little slit down the middle of it. Didn't really get to the cleavage part either, but it was just something about it being sleeveless and having that little slit to give you just a little bit better glimpse at the chest, and she had pigtails. That was a little bit of all right. What's that, Paco?
All right.
Oh, that's wrong button.
Oh, I'm so hot.
Yes, that's it. Quit talking about my wife that way, you son of a bitch. They're more caring and gentle. They make women feel less self-conscious about their bodies, as I just said. Here are the rankings for all five body types in the survey. Overweight and plus-size men, 38% of women say they're the best in bed. Athletic and muscular men, 21%. Now, here's where I think the difference would lie. I feel like that 17% lies in the difference of a choice. Like, if you're the kind of chick I imagine who really likes a good railing, you know what I mean? Like, you want some porno-style loving. I kind of feel like you're going to need a guy with some cardio in order to pull that off. But if you're the kind of lady who likes a little bit of nice passion or whatever and a slow-moving kind of thing, then, yeah, dad bod's the way to go. What am I doing? Men over 6 feet tall, 13%. Men under 5'8", only 10%. So they still like them tall, dark, and handsome, but just with a little bit of a love handle. Slim and petite men, 9%. So unfortunately, the scrawny guys, although they may appreciate the bodies, not so good on delivering. Little disclaimer, that all comes from England. So if you are in the U.S., this could mean that women feel very differently, but I can't imagine culturally that there is that much difference today. While we're talking about Julie and helping kids with homework and stuff like this, here's a thing that says, if you hate math, don't help your kids with their math homework. If you spent your whole life hating math, you probably don't want your kids to be cursed with the same issue. So here's some advice. When they pull out their math homework, don't even try to help them. A new study by the University of Chicago found that parents who hate math shouldn't try to help their kids learn it because they could transfer their anxiety to their kids. Now, I kind of feel like this is bullshit. I kind of feel like you could still get the message across by just saying, listen, I don't like it either, but you got to get it done. And that's just the facts. But I do get, I think, where they're all coming from, and we've either done that or maybe seen somebody who's done that or can get our minds wrapped around the idea of it being a thing where, you know, oh, yeah, my wife does this. She's like, math was so hard for me. And I was like, stop fucking saying that shit. Like, just you set the bar, they'll hit it. That's my philosophy. Thanks to Julie. Kids whose parents hate math did worse in math class if their parents tried to help them study. If their parents just kept their distance, the kids did fine in class. So get them a tutor. Do that. Researchers say, quote, even though their efforts can be incredibly well-intentioned, when parents are trying to help with math, it can actually backfire. And then getting back to the loving. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I was Common Core math sucks. That's what Ashton just said. Yeah, I don't know what Common Core math really is. I was kind of the person, because I was the youngest in my family, I would get my nieces and nephews calling me. I was the one who spent the most time in college. And so I think that's why I ended up being the person that they would call to ask for help. And I would do that. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think I would just get a tutor. I think that's what I would do. And I don't know how expensive they are. I'll cross that bridge when it gets there. But so far, so good on the academic front. I mean, granted, they're only in first grade. The other one's still finger painting at preschool. So we'll see how that goes. But here's a little article for you, fellas. I don't think this is kind of a no-dust shit. But many women, possibly all women, turn evil when they're hungry, which is why this makes perfect sense. A new study from University of California, San Diego, found that women are the most into romance right after they eat. They had 20 young women fast, then look at images of romantic things during an MRI scan. Now, that to me is the part of the study I would like to know. I would like to know what is, like, is it just flowers? Is it nothing but Channing Tatum, Matthew McConaughey, and Chris Hemsworth pictures? Or what is it? Then the women did the same thing on a full stomach and were much more responsive to romantic cues. The researchers say, quote, instead of being anxious and annoyed and irritable when we're hungry, once we're sated or satiated, I would imagine, not hungry. Sated, this seems like a weird word. But anyway, Paco's not here to say, no, that's a normal word that normal people use. Then we can get on to better things. It was a pretty small study. It didn't even look at men, and they don't want to draw major conclusions, but we're going to run with it. In other words, after a meal, after a meal actually might be the best time to try to have sex. Now you know, guys, and that comes from time.com. So that was the show. I am going to do a little bit of a moment Oh, gosh. Oh, that was just my headphones. Thank God. I think I'm going to do a little moment of the week. And if you want to call in, if you're listening live, 877-222-8323 and chat a little bit. I got a little bit of time before we hang up. 877-222-8323. And we'll talk to you while I'm doing moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So I mentioned it earlier. We, as a gift to my wife for her birthday, she has been begging for years for us to do the family photos. And I don't know why I've had a block on it. I kind of thought of when I saw the picture of myself that it may be my own insecurity, I guess. I never would have thought of myself to be that guy. I'm not worried about aging or anything like that, but it is alarming when you have an unbelievably gorgeous wife standing next to you and you just look like a schlub. But I decided, I'm like, you know what, it's time. I had a friend who does photography, and he lives down here, and so I said, that'll be fun, and I could put a few ducats in his pocket. It's a win-win. And it was very cute what came out of it. It was Jack was saying he wanted to wear costumes. And so we were like, we're kind of like dodging this idea. And to my wife's credit, because I kind of let her run with everything on this because it was her thing, I said, she said, well, you could go look and we'll see, kind of a thing. And he found, we had bought for his birthday party, because he's way into the Minions, those goofy-looking glasses that look like the bottom of Coke bottles kind of things. And so we bought them so everybody could kind of dress up as a Minion if they wanted to at the party. And it was awesome because he had about four pairs of these glasses, and we took, I'll put it on the Facebook page if I can find it. We took a photo of all of us wearing these goofy glasses and deadpan. We're sitting in our backyard looking right into the camera, and it looks like the craziest version of American Gothic, like family edition that you could ever imagine. And it was unbelievably adorable. And it's not really a moment where my kids had much to do with any of it, but we also went out to Malibu because, yeah, where are those people, I guess? And went to the beach so we could take photos in the sand. And there's a couple shots of just the family walking on the beach. And it was very awesome because it's that thing. I encourage you to do it if you haven't already. If anybody else has that same kind of mental block on doing the family photos, especially now, just find a friend who you feel comfortable with, take some photos, because it's really cool to be able to look at your entire family in like a beautiful backdrop, and just it captures this little moment where you really feel good. And that's the other thing, is that yesterday we all had, I'm about to start working for, I know, guys, I know I have a part-time job, but I'm about to work every day for 3 weeks straight. And I don't know how anybody's going to deal with it. I don't know if I'm going to live, if I don't, it's very life or death. And, but yesterday we had a day where we just kind of hung out as a family. Natalie was off. I didn't have to work. So we're hanging out and we just sat in the pool, and I just look at the kids are playing with me in the pool. And then I was chilling in the pool, and it's just a tiny little redneck, you know, $80 Target pool that's like 3 feet tall and maybe 8 feet wide. But it's a nice little pool, and we were sitting relaxing, and my wife was sitting outside because she doesn't like to get cold at all. And I just look in my wife in my nice yard, and I imagine a lot of you have had these kinds of moments where you kind of just kind of have a check-in where, you know, like it's easy for me to imagine Lori from PA looking at her 1,100 square foot pavers that she put in, and you kind of just kind of look around. And if you haven't had one of those moments recently, just go in your backyard or stand in your living room or your kitchen and just kind of take a moment and look. God, I am really being blowhardy this episode. I'm sorry, but It really is kind of nice to look around and not necessarily look at like, oh, fuck, I got to wipe that counter, but look at it through the lens of going, this is what my work has done for me. And look at, remember the hard times of the sleepless nights that you've had and the moments when you were both broke as a couple, either with the kids or before the kids. I'm sure like it's easy for Butcher Drew to remember the years. I don't even know how long he was there, but the poor guy's living with his in-laws waiting for his house to get ready. And, you know, now he's in the house, and look at all of that and look at where you are now
And hopefully you're in that point in your life where it's like, oh my gosh, look at where we came from and look at where we are now. Look how much better things are now. Because I looked at my wife and I said, did you ever think when we were 18 years old that life would be this good? And not financially. We're not loaded. You know what I mean? We're okay, I guess, is what everybody's supposed to say. I don't make a ton of money. I'm not buying islands or chartering ships. But if I wanted to go on vacation, I guess I could. It wouldn't be smart kind of a person. That's where I am financially. But just happy. Just fulfilled. We have the kids. We have the backyard. We're hanging out, laughing. Life is good. So that's what I have to say about that. Anyway, thank you guys very much for tuning in. I'm hoping that we will do another episode maybe this week so I can stockpile them up just to give you an idea of what the plans are. If Paco's going to be busy for the next couple weeks, maybe just a week, I'm not sure, but I'm also going to be, my schedule's all going to be sporadic. So if we do an episode at all, it'll probably be Friday night. I'm guessing 7 o'clock, but Daddy's got an early bedtime. And then I might also, for anybody who knows, I do a This Week in Bad Parenting with Steve King on CD 105.9, Omaha's classic rock. And I'm going to start pre-taping those segments for him because I'll be busy during his morning show for a couple weeks. And one of the ideas I had is like, well, if I'm going to pre-tape, maybe I can have him on as a guest and do an episode that way. I don't know that that will happen, and I'm sorry that I have no definites for you, but I wanted to give you all the information that I had. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, Julie Lithcott-Hames, author of How to Raise an Adult, howtoraiseanadult.com, at Dean Julie on Twitter, at Raise an Adult, also on Twitter, facebook.com/howtoraiseanadult. All of that is in the description for this episode. You can check out Justin is Married, Booker is Single. Give us a like at facebook.com/dadpodcast. Oh, speaking of the Dad Podcast page, Paco just did a pick-a-flick that involves Mission Impossible and I believe one other movie. I unfortunately did not have a chance to see the whole thing, but the video is up at facebook.com/dadpodcast. You don't need to have a Facebook to watch it, but he did, and it's awesome. It really, really is incredible. He did cool effects and all this stuff. And the other thing I need to mention is if you want to participate in our fantasy football league, we have a Dad Podcast Fantasy Football League for anybody who is a new listener within the last year. You need to send an email to Chris. He is our guy who runs it, and his email is Saint, as in the football team Saint, but without the S, 27@msn.com. Again, S-A-I-N-T, the number 2, the number 7, at msn.com, and he will get you added to our fantasy football league, and do that post haste, my friend, so that we can have our draft done before the regular season starts. It is football time, and ladies are highly encouraged. Tiffany Hendricks, I haven't seen her in the chat room, but I think it's because she has a full-time job from Indianapolis. I hope I got her last name wrong. Right. I mean, I think I might have messed up. I know her name. First name is Tiffany. She won last year, champion. So usually what I try to do is have some kind of a fun trophy. I had this idea last year, and I was going to get a World's Greatest Dad coffee mug is what I was going to give. But since she won, I got her a fantasy football queen. So coffee mug, and I'll work out whoever wins. Usually we'll have you on the show as well, but Tiffany had already been on the show, and I wanted to have something a little extra for her as well. So that's that. I'm babbling now. So enough of that. On behalf of the fantastic Julie Lithcott-Hames, author of How to Raise an Adult, this is Justin Worsham saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, everybody.